Everyone, welcome to Double Feature with Cheryl and Angela. This week we're actually going to be watching Superman 1978 and giving our thoughts on this movie as compared to last week's movie, which was Aquaman. And we're going to discuss how the superhero film genre has evolved in the last 40 years. I'm Angela.
I'm Cheryl.
Hello. All right, so Superman 1978, let's jump into it. Thoughts?
So overall, I really liked this movie.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you said that. Okay. I was like, what if she hates it?
No, I loved it. I thought it was super cheesy and super fun. And also I think like Superman, or this Superman movie in particular, like has such a place in pop culture, and it really kind of kicked off a decade of massive blockbusters just like it. So yeah, I think it's also a super important movie.
I actually didn't realize that this was actually the first like superhero movie, and it really just started off like the entire superhero genre. So yeah, I really liked the movie overall. I also thought it was super cheesy, but it was really it was really enjoyable. I think it was one of those cheese fests where it's just like, it's fun, and I mean, it's been 40 years, right? It was made in 41 years ago, but I think it really still holds up.
Yeah,
I really like that. Yeah,
I agree. In particular, Christopher Reeve's performance as Superman still really holds up.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's so adorable.
I've never seen this film before, and so when they were like showing the teenage version of him, and I was like, is that Christopher Reeve? Like, is this what people have been like ranting about this whole time? Like how amazing his acting is, and I was like, I'm not really feeling it. And then I realized that was just the teenage version of him, and I was like, okay, thank God, there's someone else. So.
Yeah. No, Christopher Reeve is amazing in this role. He reminds me a lot of Chris Evans in Captain America. Yeah, just very heartwarming and sweet and innocent.
I feel like this movie reminds me of both Spider-Man and Captain America in the sense it's very genuine, like, oh, I'm just like not a country boy, but you know, like a very humble, nice boy who just like came into all this power, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, he's just such a nice man. Right? And you just like want him to be your neighbor or something. Yeah. But yeah, so his romantic interest is Lois Lane, and she's played by Margot Kidder, who I also loved in this role. I thought that she was an amazing Lois Lane. She was like super kick-ass and super like, I don't know, I just loved her as, you know, the reporter who's, like, trying to get all the leads, and I really bought it.
So, no, she was great. I really did like her. I thought at first that she was going to be kind of one note, because at the very beginning where she meets Clark Kent, she kind of just seemed very, like, I don't know, they're working in this, like, news office. She seems very, like, dead set on, like, her career, and it just seemed like she was being played as this, oh, I'm, like, a career woman. I have no time for, like, anything else in my life. Mm-hmm. And I like how, I mean, the Clark Kent version of Superman brings out, like, the very, like, professional, put-together version of her, and also the Superman side of him brings out, like, this more, like, gentle, but also, like, very...
Yeah.
I don't want to say feminine, but definitely, like, she's the romantic interest, so definitely a more feminine side of her. And I think both of those combined together makes a really, really good Lois Lane overall.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, and in contrast, I mean, the only Lois Lane that I've seen before this was Amy Adams's Lois Lane.
Oh, I forgot.
That's
right. She's also Lois.
Yes. And I think that Lois Lane was very boring, and this Lois Lane is extremely, like, she just has, like, so much more character, I think. And she's so much more multifaceted. And I was worried, like, going into it that she would just be, like, the damsel in distress, but she's definitely not. Like, she's really, really interesting and really, I think, progressive for her time, because this was made in the late 70s.
So what are your thoughts about Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor? I saw your notes earlier, and it said something about a evil mustache twirling James Bond villain. And I was like, this is the perfect way to describe him.
He really is. He's so ridiculous. So the his plan, his evil plan, is to send a nuclear missile to California.
Wait, I thought it was to steal
a Yeah.
To steal
a nuclear missile and then launch it so that it goes to California and blows up the fault line so that California, like, falls into the ocean. And then he's bought up all the other real estate that's, like, on the other side of the fault line. So he would just, like, make that into, like, I don't know, some kind of, like, amusement park or something.
Oh, is that his plan?
I don't know. To sell it or just, I don't know.
I thought it was especially ridiculous that he had to steal the nuclear missile and then launch it on the fault line, not even just, like, to kill people, because I think that might be too, like, violent or sinister. But, right. Just launch it at the fault line so then, like, whatever happens next, it's kind of not his problem.
Yes.
Like, what is it? Like, plausible deniability. Yeah. Like, I didn't actually kill those people. I just launched it at the fault line.
Yeah. So. No. He was insane. I also really liked the moment at the end where Superman brings him and, like, his henchmen to the prison. And then he, like, rips off his wig. And, like, it turns out he's bald. Which, like... Okay, like, I mean, Lex Luthor is canonically bald, but, like, I don't,
this is such a weird thing to keep. Like, hair, I could give less, I could not, Anyways, but yeah.
Yeah, but, so we already talked about the James Bond villain plan, but I also really liked Clark's personal development, so that was kind of the other plot line of this movie, so... it starts from his birth on Krypton, and then it goes all the way up to him, like, being Superman and saving the world. And I think that that was really compelling because you really, like, care. Like, you know, you don't care about the James Bond villain stuff, but you really care about Clark Kent and you know, his father dying and him, like, not really knowing his place, and then being able to figure that out and, like... you know, come to fruition, or everything comes to fruition at the end. What did you think about that?
I also really liked how his personal development kind of just, like, manifested. I thought, like, well, the only other Superman movie that I've watched before this was the original Man of Steel, and then also, like, Batman v Superman and all that. But it kind of shocked me, like, how much Man of Steel, like, drew from this movie. Like, it's almost, like, beat for beat exactly what happens. Like, he's on Krypton. There's even, like, the whole, like, discovering the little holographic projector thingy in the in the ice fortress. And I think it was done really, really well. I really like the part where Clark Kent's, like, human father dies because of a stroke or a heart attack or something, because I think that really lends, like, credence to his overall, like, I wouldn't say, like, morals, but, like, the whole point of Superman is that he's supposed to be strong enough to save everybody that he loves. But then he's not able to save the one person that, like, really, really is close to him,
right?
Because there's nothing you can do about, like, a heart attack. And I think that was a really good choice. I think it really kind of, it shows you his character. It kind of shows you why he's so, like, humble. Like, I compare this character to some of the other superheroes that we see now, and he's just a kind of a very different breed.
That's very true. And I think that in Man of Steel, it's really confusing. He, like, gets killed or Jonathan Kent gets killed in a tornado, and he doesn't want Clark to save him, and
he
it
could
just,
have,
like,
been saved.
Yeah,
I still stand by that. He could have been saved, but
No. And in this movie, like you said, there's really nothing that you can do about a heart attack. And I think that, like, the humility that Clark Kent displays is so different than, like, Iron Man's arrogance or, like, really any Marvel superhero.
With the exception of maybe Captain America.
Right.
So he's also from that time period. So I think it's, definitely, you definitely see that. Okay, so I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about, like, the critical acclaim that this movie received. I didn't know any of this because I didn't grow up during this time, but this movie actually made a lot of money in the box office, $300 million apparently, in 1978, which I think is tremendous. And it was also, like, a critical success. It got three Oscars, or was nominated for three Oscars. best editing, best sound, best music, and also got, like, a special nod to the special effects of the movie, which were really, really, like, impressive for its time. And I just realized that, like, despite all of these achievements, like, we don't really talk about how, like, how, not progressive, but kind of, like, how important this film was mm-hmm. for the entire genre, just because now we have all these, like, multi-million dollar movies, superhero movies, like, every other month, basically. And, yeah, I just really think it's amazing that this movie is the one that started it all.
Right. Yeah, that is really crazy. And I think living in a world where superhero movies are the norm and not the exception, it is really interesting to go back and see, like, oh, there was a time when superhero movies were really, like, it was kind of a risk to make one. Yeah, so that is really cool. Mm-hmm.
So now let's move on to the next part of this, which is the other side of double feature, where we compare the movie that we saw, or the older movie that we saw with the newer movie that we just saw. So that would be comparing Superman to Aquaman.
Yeah.
In terms of that, yeah. Thoughts?
It honestly struck me how similar these two movies were. Mm-hmm. Obviously not, like, in scope or special effects or anything like that, but the plots were really, really similar. There's a lot of, like, hopey cheesiness, as I wrote in our notes. It's like, really kind of silly in a lot of cases. Both movies are, like, when Superman saves the cat from the tree, or, like, when, I don't know, I can't even remember, like, all of the other kind of ridiculous things that he does.
He saves, like, on his way down from saving Lois Lane from the helicopter thing, he also, like, stops, like, a jewel thief.
Oh, okay.
Like,
yeah.
He's just like, officer, look at his pockets. Yeah. He's got necklaces in there. I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely got that cheesiness, which I think is, I love that. Like, it's very nice.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it's really nice to see that when all of the superhero movies that I generally watch are very self-aware and very, like, we're going to make fun of ourselves because we know that this is a trope and that this is kind of ridiculous. But this movie, like, really leans into the cheesiness. And that's also something that I loved about Aquaman. Like, it doesn't really make fun of itself in a lot of cases. Like, it really, like, leans into the ridiculousness of Aquaman, which is so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. But another thing that was really similar was the emphasis on father figures. Mm. So Clark Kent, has two fathers. He has Jonathan Kent and he also has Jor-El. And these two different views of how to deal with the world are at least one point in his development. And then with Aquaman, like, his father is so important because that's what ties him to the land. And, of course, his mother is important as well because that's what ties him to the sea. And so, like, being able to reconcile his father with his mother is kind of a big point or a big plot point in Aquaman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the whole father figure thing is very interesting because I almost see that as, like, I know you marked this down as, like, a similarity. I almost mm-hmm. think that it's very, like, different in that sense, even mm-hmm. though it is, like, focused on the father figure.
Yeah.
They both play, like, very different roles mm-hmm. In the lives of, like, the protagonist. So for Superman, I think having two father figures kind of emphasizes how, like, he's not of this world. Mm. Yes. So it kind of shows how, like, he is technically someone who, like, shouldn't be here. Mm. But on the other hand, I think Aquaman, by having, like, one father and one mother who are of different, like, land and sea, I think it almost, like, makes him more, like, unique. I don't really know how to explain it, but it just feels like it's, like, a different position for me.
No, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, and I think Superman's whole thing is that he's, like, not human, but he like, exemplifies the best of human beings. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it definitely does make him feel more I think it makes him feel less human, while Aquaman's parents definitely make him feel more human. So I agree with that. But I think it's interesting also that the whole thing with, like, daddy issues has not changed since 1978.
Oh, gosh.
Like, they're, like, every superhero you can think of has daddy issues. Like, Iron Man has a problem with his father, and so does...
Peter Quill, Star-Lord.
Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy, and so does Bruce Wayne, and so...
Wow.
Yeah, and, like, all of these characters... have also, Peter Parker, his whole thing is just about how he doesn't have a father figure.
Yeah, and his only father figure dies. That's also a big pivotal part.
So
Ant-Man, he's like a father. There's just so much of that.
Ant-Man kind of turns that trope on its head because, like, he's dealing with being the father figure for someone else. But yeah, and, like, what other movies? Oh, Aquaman has that, yeah, it's kind of crazy. And, like, Wonder Woman even kind of has that, except it's, like, mother figures. It's mommy issues.
I mean, what else can you write about?
Okay. No, it's crazy how little it's changed in that way. And then I think another major similarity is the idea of destiny in both of these movies. In Superman, Jonathan Kent is always telling Clark Kent that, you know, he was sent to this earth for a purpose, and, like, you have to find out what that purpose is. And then also, I think Mara in Aquaman is, like, always telling Arthur, like, you have a purpose, and, like, your destiny is to... be king of Atlantis and to unite the land and sea and all that stuff. And I think that that's, like, such a huge, like, also just a really similar point in their character development, which just, again, like, hasn't changed in the last 40 years. Like, Aquaman is the most recent superhero movie to come out, and, like, that's still so similar, which I just think is crazy.
I feel like if you don't center a superhero movie around the idea of, like, destiny, I kind of don't really, like, know what else you could, like, center it around. Because I feel like there's the two roads. There's either you were destined for this, like, you are chosen for this purpose, which is what we see in, like, Superman and Aquaman, or it's just, like, anybody in the world could become this one thing, and that's the whole, like, Peter Parker, like, I mean, responsibility, like, you were given this responsibility, which, like, what are you going to do with it? And I think Superman's kind of, like, the first, like, foray into, like, both of those realms. You see the one side where he's, like, this, like, magnificent alien being who's, like, all-powerful on Earth, and he's destined, he just, like, landed here, he was sent here for a purpose, to save humanity, to, like, bring out the best in humanity. And at the same time, he could have been any, like, it's not that he could have been anybody, but it's just, like, he is such a nobody on a day-to-day basis. He is just regular Clark Kent, usually.
Yeah, that is really interesting.
And then, this is another point that I saw, but just the idea that there's so many superhero films that I feel like draw upon, like, older, like, biblical tales, or kind of, like, for Aquaman, I noticed especially, like, the Knights of the Round Table kind of thing. His name's Arthur, for starters.
Yeah, that's true.
Then, he has to, like, unite all the different kingdoms. He's the chosen one. He must take the trident out of the little... stone thing.
Oh my god, I never thought about that. That's so true.
It's really interesting. I think it's very interesting that I think this is probably going to be a larger point, like a side tangent, but I think superhero movies have become kind of these mythical, like, stories that we tell ourselves. Like, we no longer are so attached to, like, mythology, like, who writes about Zeus and, like, Athena these days, but, like, we have all these superheroes who embody all these different elements that we once like kind of idolized.
And I think that's really interesting. It's definitely, like, the 21st century's mythology, like, superheroes are. But I think that brings up a question of whether or not the superhero genre is a unique genre, or if it's really just, like, a reinterpretation of everything that has come before.
Yeah.
Or not everything, but, you know, like, adventure stories and, like, biblical figures and stuff like that that have come before.
Yeah.
Because especially when you look at Superman, I mean, he is Jesus, pretty much.
Right? Like, especially Man of Steel. He, yeah. Like, he even becomes, like, what is it, like, revived after his death.
Yeah.
He comes back to life.
Yes.
He's the chosen one.
Yeah. He falls out of the sky to a couple that has no children. He's raised in, like, a very small, like, no, like, middle of nowhere kind of town. And then he becomes, like, an all-powerful god that is, like, a symbol of humility and love. And
Oh, my gosh. And he's here sent to, like, for a purpose.
Mm-hmm. And he's sent by his, like, other father who could be...
Okay, this has come full circle.
Yeah.
We finally understood this movie. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's such a good point. Yeah.
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 Hmm. It's really insane.
All right.
But yeah, do you think that superhero films, like, have a unique element to them? Or do you think that they're really just, like, the myths of today?
I don't know. It's hard for me to, like, classify superhero films as, like, a separate genre just because I think it's almost like... Like, well, I mean, everything else is constructed, like, films in itself, like, even film genres are constructed, but superhero films, for me, feel especially constructed, because it, like, I was doing some research on this film, but it was originally made because of, like, the science fiction and fantasy films that came out in the 1970s, and they wanted to, like, choose a different, like, element, like, choose a different thing to bring into film, and so they chose, like, the medium of comic books, and that became its own genre. I think for me right now they are technically, like, a genre, but I do think of them as kind of like a splice between maybe, like, fantasy, a little sci-fi. I mean, most of the Marvel films are, like, comedies, so it's like a comedy action, like, sci-fi fantasy film. And we call that a superhero film. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's definitely more like a melding of multiple different genres than it is a unique thing on its own. But I think that, I don't know, maybe in the next, like, 20 years or something, you could really see it become, like, its own thing. So I'm really excited to, like, see where it goes.
Me too. Here. Me too. Yeah. I wonder if they're going to keep on trying the same formula, not exactly formula, but Marvel, like, has, I think by now we kind of understand what Marvel's, like, whole deal is. You can kind of pick out a superhero, like, a Marvel superhero film from, like, a lineup, but I wonder if they're going to try to, like, put the superhero film in different genres to make it more expansive and to kind of create its own, like, subset. But yeah.
Right, yeah. And I think that they have tried, like, you know, superhero movies, I think, started out more as, at least in the past two decades, they started out much more as serious dramas, especially when you think of, like, Bryan Singer's X-Men.
Dark Knight.
Yeah, or The Dark Knight, or even, like, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy. Like, those are much more dramas than they are comedies. And now superhero films have expanded into comedies, and I kind of wonder if there are, like, do you think that there's any other genre that it is, or that is ripe for superhero movies?
I mean, this is just a personal favorite, but I love Logan, and I wish there's a way to kind of, like, revamp, like, the whole, like, Western kind of film genre, which we don't really see these days anymore. I can think of like maybe, like, three or four off the top of my head. But I think it'd be interesting if they could, like, revitalize older genres that we don't see so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it kind of feels, like, kind of kitschy. Like, like, how many Westerns can you do before people, like, start comparing it all to Logan? Like, if you made, like, I don't know, if you made, like, another, I don't know, Deadpool movie who's that's also a Western, like, everybody's just gonna compare it to Logan,
right?
So I don't know if, like, that would actually be feasible.
Right. Yeah. Love rom-coms. So I would honestly love to see someone take that on.
Oh my gosh.
A superhero rom-com.
That would be adorable.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I would love to see that.
I vote Chris Evans as Captain America, but not with anybody related to Peggy or Peggy herself.
Yeah. Oh my god.
No.
That's a whole we could talk for a long time about how weird that was.
Okay. Well, let's move on.
Yeah.
So, on to the differences. So, what do you think were some of the main differences between Aquaman and Superman?
So, I definitely think that the scope of the movie is incredibly different. So, Superman is, saving kittens from trees and, stopping bank robbers and things like that. Very, Saturday morning cartoon-esque stuff. And then Aquaman, saves the whole planet. Literally the whole planet.
I mean, wouldn't you say, the fault line of California is very, very big part of the world?
That's true. It is well populated. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, I mean, just in general, I think the mythology of Aquaman is also just so much more fleshed out. There are all of these characters. Mira and Atlanta and who else? Volko and Orm and Manta and so many different characters from Aquaman's mythology. Mm. And with Superman, you really only get a few characters that are major tenants of his story, at least. And also with Aquaman, I think you get so much more of the world fleshed out. It really does feel like this is a whole, different world. And with Superman, it feels very much this is, our world. Or this is late 1970s New York.
Yeah.
Maybe more innocent. Definitely more innocent version of that city at that time. But certainly much more grounded than Aquaman is. So in that sense, I feel superhero movies in general have tried to become more and more kind of expansive in how they approach movie making.
Yeah. And I think it's probably a testament to just kind of the superhero film industry that we're in now, but it feels like every single film nowadays is dead set on trying to create this expanded universe.
Right.
Even things that were more contained, I'm thinking X-Men originally, there's so much world building. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think as the first Superman film, they didn't really have any expectations. They didn't really expect probably it to do as well as it did. And they were just trying to make a movie, I think. They were just trying to tell a contained story with, one main protagonist, maybe, a love interest, a family, things like that. And I think there's, a huge difference in scope, even though I would contend that California is a pretty big place
yes.
to save.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Saving California is pretty important.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just very different. Aquaman, it feels like the entire world is dependent upon him, and he has to just save everybody. Mm-hmm. And despite the fact that it is Superman and how that character has evolved over time, I think the original Superman film, he's very much, trying to save the people he loves. He literally turns back time to save Lois Lane. I thought that was weird, too.
I mean, maybe they, deal with it in the sequel or something like that, but it was,
weird.
So Superman turns back time so that he can save Lois Lane. I think Jor-El, tells him that he's not supposed to do this, but then the ending is just, it's very happy. There are no repercussions.
Yeah.
And I kind of think if that had happened in a movie that came out recently, people would have torn it apart.
Yeah, for sure. There is a blessing in being the first film.
Yeah.
That was super strange.
Yes.
But I'm happy, I guess. Yeah. I like Lois Lane.
Yeah,
I'm glad she's alive.
Me too. Yeah. I think another major difference is the villains. Mm-hmm. So Orm, I think, can be a little ridiculous, and I think Manta is really ridiculous. But in general, on the whole, I think they're way less mustache twirling, as we said earlier, than Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor, he's just so corny.
I think for me, Manta feels he's the only serious person. Not really. They, like, Orm and Manta both seem very, like, serious, but Manta especially, he's like, you killed my father. Like, ooh, I'm gonna avenge him and all that. But yeah. I feel like, yeah, Lex Luthor, I don't know what's going on. He has none of that, like, seriousness or kind right. of, like, I don't know, this, like, intimidating factor, like, right. to him at all. There's no sense that, like, he's any kind of a threat, mm-hmm. especially his two, like, I can't even call them henchmen, like, one guy, Otis or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
Otis.
Lex Luthor constantly berates for being stupid. Like, he yeah. says it to his face several times. And the other one is this, like, actress, his girlfriend,
yeah, or Miss Dorbacher or something like that.
Is that her name?
I have no
oh,
idea.
Oh my gosh. Let's see. Yeah.
Her name is, oh, Taskmacher?
Taskmacher?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so I can't, they're not exactly henchmen at all.
Yeah.
And Miss Thor?
Taskmacher.
Tesk.
Or, no, Taskmacher.
Taskmacher even, like, foils his plans by, like, saving him.
Yeah.
From the kryptonite, so, yeah. I mean, some yeah. villains they are.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Once no. again, I think that, like, if this movie was made today, people would literally just tear it apart.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that yeah. it wasn't.
And I think that the difference is really, or the difference between the ridiculousness of Manta and the ridiculousness of Lex Luthor is that I think James Wan was trying to make Manta, like, a serious character. Like, he was yeah. supposed to be taken seriously. And who, I don't know, whoever, Richard Donner, like, wanted to make Lex Luthor a comedic character.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't supposed to be taken seriously. He's supposed to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so I think that definitely speaks to Richard Donner's talent, and maybe not talent. So much to James Wan's. To at least, like, recognize, like, how you can use, like, overly cheesy characters to your advantage. In conclusion, I guess, how much do you think the superhero genre has changed since the late 70s, if at all?
I think the overall plot structure in Superman is very straightforward, and I mm-hmm. think because it's so straightforward, people are still using that same, like, structure. Mm-hmm. It is, like, the very basic, like, origin story
right.
that they have in many of the stories, mm-hmm. in many of the superhero films that we have today. So I think, yeah, the genre to me doesn't feel like it's changed all that much. I do like the fact that it's not very self-referential. It's not very, like, winky-winky. It's mm-hmm. just kind of, it plays everything straight, even, like, the Lex Luthor, like, it yeah. plays it pretty straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it is because they created the genre. Like, this is, like, the first manifestation of, like, the superhero film. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, they were just, like, they were allowed to just do whatever and kind of not get a lot of criticism for being, right. like, the third or fifth or 10th or 50th rendition of, like, the superhero film.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. I think that in, like, on a substantive level, the superhero genre has not changed very much at all. Like you said, I think the basic structure of the plot is extremely similar. Like, the latest movie that has come out, Aquaman, is, like, almost the same as Superman, which came out 40 years ago. The superhero genre hasn't really changed very much. And I think that, you know, Fox, before Disney bought them, was trying to change the genre a little bit, like with Deadpool and Logan. Like, obviously the plot structure is not similar at all to right. Superman or Aquaman. And I mean, I don't know, like, obviously Disney owns Fox now, so that's probably not gonna happen anymore.
Yeah.
But but I think that there isn't really very much room for growth, just because of how the industry is, and the fact that, you know, Disney and Warner Brothers own Marvel and DC. And, I mean, they're going to, you know, do what makes them money. I mean, I don't know. Deadpool made a lot of money and Logan made a lot of money, but I guess no one wants to do that. yeah. So that's really unfortunate. But that isn't to say I don't love the structure the way it is,
mm-hmm.
Because I did love Aquaman, and I also love Superman. So So I appreciate it for what it is, but I am kind of sad that there's not room to, like, grow past what it is currently.
Like, more innovation.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I'm thinking back to even films like Spider-Man Homecoming. Like, mm-hmm. it feels very much like that. The latest Into the Spider-Verse mm-hmm. also felt like that. It is an yeah. origin story, just beat for beat.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. And we will be back next week where we're watching How to Train Your Dragon 1 and 2. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. We'll let you know.